Welcome to the KP Podcast, where we talk about the business of real estate. A podcast about leveraging opportunities, growing your business, and experiencing financial freedom. Here are your hosts, Keith Anderson and Peter Kamboukos.
Hey everyone, welcome to the KP Podcast. This is Pete. I'm here with Keith. We're coming to you from the Forum. And today, guys, we are talking about what is change, what's going on in this market that all of the agents are dealing with, obviously across the country, but definitely here in our Phoenix market. And that's a big shift that has happened where all of a sudden we've got a lot more supply. And Keith, what's going on with these listings over here?
They're sitting. Sitting is what I would reference in this case. And I think the big thing that we're seeing is,
well, hang on a second.
It's different.
Are you saying that I cannot list the shed in my backyard any longer for $1 million where the roof's falling down and expect 10 offers in that first day?
No, you could do all those things, but it's just not going to actually happen. You could expect 10 offers first day. You could list that $1 million shed, but I'm here to tell you that's just not going to happen.
And that's the difference, right? Because
yes.
Last year it was happening. And so we've got...
I have a 4x4 mother-in-law suite in the back. It contains yard equipment,
yeah.
And it's going for $350,000.
No joke. So let's talk about that, because we have a lot of, not a lot, but there's a good number of agents who had never seen something other than the last several years, because that it was like that for, 2.5 years or something like that, where you could literally list anything, ask whatever you want, and you're probably going to sell it anyways. And so one of the measures that we look at is that listing success rate, okay, meaning of the properties that are listed in the MLS, what percentage of them sell? Well, over the last year and a half, we hit an all-time high, again, with record numbers, all-time highs. It was approaching 100%. It was over 95. It was in the high 90s. It was ridiculous. It literally meant anything you put on was selling. That's not normal.
Yeah. I mean, the only things that weren't were so distressed or had so many issues and still were trying to grab price that it just didn't make logical sense for anyone on the face of the earth. Like, that was literally all that was there, because the demand was so high and the supply was so low that it pushed through. So now we're seeing a little bit different, right? Like, our range is now coming back to something most people would consider normal in years past.
Well, historically, it's historically normal. And so now the historic range has been in that, mid to high 60s. And that's kind of right where we are right now. And so think about that. That means if, let's call it 66%, 67%, that means one out of three properties listed is not going to sell. It's either going to cancel, it's going to expire, something else is going to happen. So only two out of three properties that get listed are actually going to sell. And that's historically normal. But this is new, not only for a lot of agents, but quite frankly, for some sellers who go, wait a second, what do you mean?
Yeah, like this, that's crazy. Just that concept to think, like, we got down the stretch there and everyone was going to sell.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was one for one. Like, you list, you sell. Yep. As long as you list somewhat appropriately, somewhat, I said, like, not even like all the way. I'm saying somewhat appropriately, your house is going to sell.
Yeah.
Now we're in a place where you could look at your neighbors on both sides of you, and one of them is not going to end up selling their house. Like, that's just the way that it is. They'll have to take it down. They'll have to stay there. They'll have to change their plan. They'll have to make adjustments,
mm-hmm.
and they'll have to go through that process. So based on this, our concept today, guys, is how do you have success with listings in this type of market?
Right.
We're really speaking to other agents in the industry. We're speaking to sellers in the marketplace that mm-hmm. are curious why their house isn't selling, or are honestly just curious if their agent's doing a good job. Is it their agent or is it the market or what? Like, a lot of those questions come up when you see all the inventory move so quickly over the last year and now all of a sudden it's shifting. Now, guys, keep in mind, it's not always the agent. The agent has little to no control outside of what the market can hold, as long as they do the initial steps the right way. And we're gonna chat about those three major things today that actually end up selling your house.
And the continual follow up and adjustments, I would say, with that as well. But so like you said, how are we, let's talk about how you're gonna have success in these. Now, I do think real quick before we go on is just to point out, because this always brings up, you know, with okay, we've got a lot more supply and some of it's not selling, you know, the conversation that we often have between, you know, do we have a lot of supply coming to the market or is the demand down? And so we do have, and those are two very different things, right? Because those are very different markets. And so it's important to point out, we don't have a lot of supply coming. So if we look at the numbers and the data, what we're seeing is that we will probably end this year with fewer new listings than we had last year.
That's crazy.
That's crazy considering supply is up four times.
It makes a lot of sense because we're talking also about these builders starting to slow down, these things starting to happen. That means that over the next couple of years, supply isn't going to ramp up anytime soon.
So we're not seeing supply flying up. I mean, we are seeing the active inventory, but it's not because a whole bunch of supply is being dumped on the market. So why is supply up so high? Because the buyers are way down. Buyers' transactions are frozen. We're basically, you know, 50 to 60% of normal transactions. So that's the environment. So at first, it's important we point that out because it's like you have to understand what environment we're in, which was different than a real estate crash when all of a sudden there was a ton of supply being dumped on the market. And that is not what's happening now at all. It's actually the opposite. Not a lot of supply, but very low demand with those rates.
And to speak directly to sellers here, this is something that a point that we probably have to get across. You have to be aware of what the market's doing and mentally make the mental shift to what the new market looks like. Mm-hmm. We are seeing sellers, again, like we see in every market, they are slow to this change. They are slow to thinking about what's happening. They're still kind of stuck in the, but only 3 months ago, everybody was listing and my neighbor got this and my neighbor. It's different now. We have to remember that when that shift happened, it is no longer what it was yesterday, let alone 3, 4, 5 months ago.
And to be fair to sellers, this happens in every market shift. The seller psychology and awareness with that is usually the last thing to change. And like I said, to be fair to them, there's reasons for that. You know, if you own a home and you're not necessarily looking to sell or buy, you may not be paying attention, you know, as much as buyers or agents are. And so you go, oh, yeah, I heard this, like you said, 3 months ago, 6 months ago. You're just living your life. And now when you come back and you're like, what do you mean? It's completely changed from just a couple of months ago? How is that possible?
My neighbor sold their house in 3 days. Why can't you sell mine in 1 month, you know?
And so, there's part of that, you know, and it's just you saw it just happen. So, you know, what seems not that long ago that it's hard to believe. And so that psychology for sellers takes a while, whereas buyers, they're in the market every day. They're watching the rates. They're talking to their lenders. They're talking to their agents. They're seeing what's coming on the market. Like, they're more acutely aware and they react quicker because they're like, they're in it every single day like agents should be. So we've talked about that seller psychology. It takes a little while. Another thing before we kind of get into, you know, how to have the success with this, for the agents out there, it's dealing with what we call the endowment effect. And, you know, you guys probably have dealt with this when you're talking to sellers, which is, well, my house is worth more. It's like the exact comp down the street. It's the exact same model. You both have all the same things. You both bought it in the same exact year, same condition. You know, we know no property is exactly the same, but man, that's a really good comp. Oh, but mine's nicer. Well, why is it nicer? Well, I put this really nice green wallpaper in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Really sets off the countertops. You know?
It's a nice subtle sage.
whatever it is. And if you think about it, just another other take it away from real estate, because this is the same for everything across society. You know, I could say, think about it with a car. You know, if you've got your car and you've got, you know, your Toyota Camry and you're saying, well, you know, yeah, my Toyota Camry is worth, you know, my 2020 Toyota Camry, it's perfect condition. I got all the options. It's worth at least 25 grand. And then you're out there looking at the same ones of what other people are asking. They're like, God, I can't believe that guy's asking 20 grand for that 2020 Toyota Camry. You're like, it's the same car. Why is yours worth more, you know, than the one you have? And so this is something that is a very real thing, like we said, and it works its way into real estate with sellers as well. It's the psychology that, yeah, but mine's worth more.
And knowing that concept and those thoughts of a previous market and currently what they thought their house is worth helps keep those prices a little higher than they probably should be, which causes the time to sell in this market to take longer and longer and can affect the bottom line of the seller, which we can chat about. So let's jump into these three items, okay? What are the three things? Let's start with number one. What is probably the number one thing that helps a house sell?
It's not the shiny objects or the big balloons I put up front, because I'm thinking those are super valuable.
I mean, yeah, I don't know. The number one thing that helps a house sell is price.
Yep.
Price fixes everything. Mm-hmm. If you had a $1 million house and you wanted to sell it tomorrow and you went and listed it for $100,000, guess what? The house sells. That shows us that no matter what, that's where the demand features in all of this. If you have a good, well-priced house, then demand will flourish to your listing no matter what. So we know that price does sell pretty much everything. Now, the strategic part is being priced correctly in a market to get the most value for your home, and not overpricing and not extremely underpricing in a market like this. Yep. Both are very, very important in a changing market.
Yeah, and I think one of the things for agents and sellers to keep in mind, and this is something that we say all the time that is hard sometimes to fully wrap your mind around, is you as a seller, me as a seller, I don't get to determine what the price of that property is. Hmm. The market will determine that. Now, yes, sellers own the house, and so they get to choose whether they're going to accept that. They can say, no, I don't want to sell it for that. But they don't get to choose the price. Mm-hmm. They really don't. All they can do is either agree to it or not. And if they don't, then they just don't sell it and they're stuck there. But they don't. You have sellers who go, I want this for my house. If I'm being blunt about it, nobody cares what you want for your house. The market's going to bear what the market's going to bear. If it bears what you want, awesome. If it doesn't, you have a choice to make. Either accept what the market is offering or don't and stay put. But sellers do not get to determine the price. The market will always determine that price.
I think because it's our actual houses, it's our home, mm-hmm. that people feel a little bit more entitled to like the worth of the item. But it's, again, at the end of the day, it's a hard asset. It's an asset. It's something that is an investment, whether it's your primary or not. It's still a piece of investment for other people. And so I try and think of it more like the stock market, okay? If your house was an item of stock and you could go to the stock market and say, I'd like to sell this stock for $150,000 than the trading price currently, like that's what you're basically asking, you could list that. Mm-hmm. You could put it up for sale. You're not going to get anybody to buy it because mm-hmm. they're buying the other ones that are the exact same as yours mm-hmm. at a price $150 lower,
yep.
right? So it's the same concept as those other items that we see. It's the same thing as gold. If you want to sell gold for $1,000 more than everybody else, you can offer that. But it's not going to happen.
So let's go with one common thing that agents hear, because I know there's agents listening to this right now and they hear this all the time. But Keith, let's try it at a higher price, because there might be that one guy who really wants this house. And if I put it up there for $25,000 or $50,000 more than all the neighbors, but there might be one person and they really want to be on this corner or this street, or they want the one that's facing diagonal here, so they're going to pay more for this one. And this is where we get into the cost of pricing it too high.
So we have a very big analysis that we've talked about with our agents and agents in general over time. There is an actual cost to your seller for overpricing in a changing down market.
Correct.
You have to understand that the time that it takes to list your house, sell your house, could cost your seller's dollars if you're not aware of the market and the market conditions by overpricing. We use this analogy all the time. In a down market, in a changing market, listings are like milk, not like wine. They spoil with time. They don't get better. Okay, mm-hmm. You have to understand that the longer a house sits, the worse it gets for your seller's pocketbook. Like, I'll be 100% honest. So if you wait and you price a house over 50K and you're like, I'm just going to try it out. I just want to see it. Like, right. You just said, it happens all the time.
All the time.
Let's just try it. Mr. Agent, like, please just trust me. And then the agent,
what's the worst that could happen?
Yeah. In all fairness, in this market, the agent signs the listing because they're like, well, I got the listing, because they think that it's going to work out the same way. But now, instead of getting the 50K over, let's use real numbers so that you can kind of use the example. Let's say the house was worth 500K mm-hmm. theoretically. Now, even if you listed at 500K, maybe you sell it for 485, because we're in a down market and there might be some concessions in there. Let's just say it's a little under.
Yep.
If you sold it right then and there, you listed at 500. But instead, seller wanted to list the house at $550,000 because they just wanted to try it out.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted to list it for a month, give it a try, and then see where you're at. Well, after a month, Now I'm educating my buyers to list their house at 485 instead of 500. So right off the bat, they lose the 15K at list price that they could have used to leverage the price. And now they end up selling their house when they truly finally do that price adjustment down to 500, because now they want to go back to the list price I originally told them. Now they needed to be at 485, and now they're behind.
Yep.
And now the houses at 485 are selling at 475, and you're playing catch up the whole way. And if you don't list your house or adjust that price to what the market needs to be to sell it, you will continually playing catch up.
Yep. And this, the one of the things we're going to touch on too that does to understand how that mechanism works is your competition. What you've essentially done, you follow up with your example, Keith, you listed at 550 and you've got, say, two other properties that are really good comparables. 500,
510, 495.
And they're lower than yours. You've essentially pushed those buyers to your competition.
Yep.
The buyers are going, okay, well, this house is pretty much super comparable to these other two that are both priced considerably lower. I'm not even looking at that one. I'm going to go look at these two and I'm going to choose one of these. And so you've pushed the buyers that way.
Way better deal.
You know, we always see, like, when we have one in there and then we see the neighbor list, you know, considerably higher than us, we're like, awesome. They just pushed all the buyers our way. So that really helps out your competition in that neighborhood. And then think about the other part of the psychology, right? If those same buyers are going, well, I don't really love any of these three. I kind of like that one that's priced a little higher, but I'm certainly not paying for that. Now you get to that month later, he drops it to 500 and they go, okay, now let's go look at that one. And that is the one I like the best out of those three, but he's already been on the market for a month. I'm not going to give him 500. Go offer him 475.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like you forget all of that stuff. Time is money when you're listening to this.
Creating competition, even in a down market, is extremely important. It still helps you sell your house. Yeah. It still helps things happen faster. So price is extremely important.
That's number one, right? So we're going over the three things to sell a house. Number one, is it priced right? Number two, do buyers know about it? And this has changed so tremendously over the years, right? So you could talk about a long time ago where, you know, we didn't have, you know, everything listed online. We didn't have the internet. Yeah, there used to be in books that we'd have to flip over. Somebody would have to go to an agent, see a sign. There'd have to be an open house. Today, everybody knows, guys. Everybody knows when your house is listed, and we'll talk about how you can differentiate. But if it's listed with an agent, look, it's on the MLS. Those IDX fees are going out to literally thousands of
every
sites.
Every site.
You know, you've got the big ones, the Zillows, the Realtor.coms, the Homes, you know, et cetera. They're going out on those third-party sites. They're out there. Every home buyer starting on the internet, they're seeing them everywhere. You know, we're posting it on social media. Like, it's out there and they know about it, right? So they're aware. Now, we'll talk about how do you differentiate and how do you, in a sea where you've got, you know, a whole bunch of stuff out there, how do you get them to click on it and pay attention to it or look at it? But they're seeing it, you know? So that's number two, though.
The only difference in that is if you're dealing with a very, very high-end luxury property or something extremely specialized, like commercial or a special type of land. Like, outside of those, if you have a traditional 3-2 in a normal neighborhood, your house is seen. Right. It's seen like crazy. And so just don't get caught up in the mess and the industry as a whole saying, like, we list houses better because we advertise them more than other people. And it's like, not really. Okay, so like, just make sure that you know that if you list the house correctly through an NAR agent that's putting it on the MLS, that's pushing it out to all the feeds, your house is getting seen.
Right.
And that's the only expectation of those oddities when it comes to listings.
Yeah, 100%. So we'll talk about how to make it stand out in a little bit. But to Keith's point, if you've got a very small, specialized, smaller buyer pool, then yes, it makes sense in those things to go target that buyer pool and go proactively go find that buyer pool. But again, that doesn't apply to 90% of the properties that we're talking about here in residential. And then number three, does it show well?
And again, look good.
This matters now because people have options.
Yes.
For the last couple of years, it was sight unseen. I don't care. Yeah, walls falling down,
just
whatever.
Give me the house.
Just give me the house.
Yep.
Now they've got options.
They're looking through every photo. They never used to do that. They used to be the first three, and they're like, cool, sounds good, sign me up.
They're walking in, and if they're stepping in dog poop in the backyard, that's not leaving a whole good impression, especially when they got 12 other options that same day that they're looking at that are all similar.
So this is a two parts here, guys, so that you understand. It's the way it's presented online, mm-hmm. because that's part of it showing well. Are the photos well done? Are they professional or are they on a cell phone crooked? It does matter now, guys.
Is there a Taco Bell thing on the counter?
Is there fast food scrambled all over the house? Is it clean? Like, these are things that people see on a photo, and why would they go look at yours or waste their time when they have 12 other listings that are the same price in the same area that look nice? So the photos and the display of the listing has to be nice. The second piece of that is the actual showing experience. So once you get them in the door, that's the first challenge. The second thing is they have to feel homey, if you will, in your home. Does it smell bad? Does it look bad? Are there weird sounds and different things going on inside the house? Are they uncomfortable because sellers want to stay at home? Yeah. This all happens. Every experience in the showing atmosphere matters. So you have to start to add that element to it as well. You have to truly make that an experience for the potential buyers walking in that they can feel comfortable in that home.
Yep, absolutely. So, and like we said, this is stuff that didn't matter over the last couple of years. And we're bringing this all up again because now you actually have to do the work, have some skill in here about how are you doing this. So again, those three things that sell the three things that sell the house. Is it priced right? Do buyers know about it? And does it show well? And like he said, there's two parts to that. If you've got those three, then you're set up for success. And let's move on to the last two pieces here, which is then what are we doing, assuming that we've got these three in place, right? So now the key is communicating and having those weekly check-ins and updates with your seller. And what are you going over in that? What's the listing activity? How many showings do we have? Pull the data out of the MLS and the big sites like Zillow. Your sellers are looking at Zillow anyways. Pull it. How many people are clicking on the house on Zillow? How many impressions did it get that day? How many people are saving it? How many people are sharing it on the MLS? How many people are, you know, requesting it? And more importantly than that is, what else are they looking at? Remember, guys, on your listings on the MLS, you can see what other people who save your house, what other ones are they saving? What other ones are they looking at? And so it's important to talk to your sellers about what is the competition. So one of the things I always do with my sellers every week is we go over how many properties are available in our neighborhood. How many of those are comparable to ours? How many new properties came on in the last week? And how many of those are comparable to ours? How many went pending in the neighborhood in the last week? And how many of those are comparable to ours? And what we're trying to figure out is there activity in this neighborhood? You know, is there a bunch of stuff coming onto the market? Is there a bunch of stuff coming off to the market?
Yep.
You know, is this neighborhood dead? Or are we seeing a lot of activity and they're not choosing our house? You know, if we see several went pending this last week and we look and we go, wow, five went pending in this neighborhood this last week and three of those are comparable to ours. What does that tell you? It tells you that buyers are choosing another comparable property over your listing.
Mm-hmm.
Now you need to go back up to those three things and go, why? Why are they doing that? And this is how, and this is the meat of it, guys. You're looking at that competition, you're looking at the activity, and you want to see, is this a whole market neighborhood thing? Or is there activity and is there movement? They're just not choosing your listing, because now you can go back with the seller and analyze. Well, are they seeing it? Are we getting showings and we're not getting offers? Are we getting no showings? How are we priced compared to that stuff that's moving? Like, now you know what to look at, so you can pull levers and make adjustments where you need to get that property sold.
Your active research and communication is what helps you verify those first three things are still working well. Keep that in mind. It still comes back to those three items. The pricing, do buyers know about it, and does it show well? Those are only three that really determine if this house is going to sell. The difference is the strategies Pete's talking about right now, the communication, the market updates, the competition checks, all of those things verify, am I still priced well? Do I still show well? And am I still competing and am I out there against the other listings in the market? That is what that is for. So if you don't do the communication, the weekly strategies, you're hurting yourself in the long run for this listing.
Yeah. And the feedback with that, again, we're back in a place where you've got to ask for the feedback, guys. See what you can get from other agents. See what they're telling you, because, again, that's going to feed into
your
info.
You might not know it smells bad. I had a listing in the past that it had a bad stench to it, and I didn't know. I didn't.
Yeah.
I was unaware. But after the listing had already been put up and all set up, things happened in the house that made it doesn't smell good anymore. So without that feedback and me going to the house on a regular basis to check it and make sure, I would not have known. And that is so important both for sellers and people in that environment of selling their houses to know that.
And the last thing we want to touch on is it goes back to what we talk about. We go, okay, if it's out there for 90% of the houses, people know about it, they're seeing it. Well, how can we get this to stand out? How might we entice somebody to click on ours?
Magic beans.
Yeah. What could it be? And so this is some of these things that we have to talk about or use in today's market that we really haven't had to do some of these in a long time. So let's talk about some of the stuff that you might put out there in a social media ad, for example, right? Or you might put on the listing. So this first one might be something that goes on a listing. And kind of I'll say the first two kind of go together, but we'll touch on them a little bit differently. Seller concessions and buy downs, okay? Rate buy downs. So seller concessions, obviously those – this is something you can put in a listing. You can offer up in those remarks in there somewhere, showing that the seller is willing to work. And why does it matter today? Because of rates, because of points that people need to put in there, cash that they're needing to bring. It is more costly for them to go through that closing process today than it was a year ago. Not only because the rates are up, but the costs on these rates are up.
It can help you offset price in a few other things where maybe you're not the cheapest house in the neighborhood, but you're competitive. But by offering some of these things, you can help affect that bottom line for your buyers, which really, really matter.
Right, because not everybody is only looking at that price. They're looking at, man, what's my cash out of pocket?
That monthly payment going
to
be.
And so these seller concessions, you know, those are speak to certain people there, which leads into the second one. Those seller concessions can be used for rate buy downs.
Correct.
Just like you said, these right now, the monthly payments, the cash to close this thing, they're up tremendously from a year ago. And so offering, you know, part of those concessions to buy down that rate to help that buyer with their monthly payment. And if you can do the ads correctly and legally, get with your mortgage professional. But you can advertise, hey, this house, you know, get in there for $3,000 a month or whatever the payment is. That might grab some buyers' attention because people are looking at what's my monthly payment? Yep. What can I afford?
No, absolutely. Last couple outside the box thinking ones that can help you get across the finish line that aren't always available and are probably pretty rare, but they are stuff that can set you apart. One of which is seller financing. Mm-hmm. So if you have a seller that owns a house in cash or has the ability to offer seller financing to a potential buyer, they might be able to beat the rate that is out there. They might even be matching it, but now they don't have to qualify as an aggressive qualification. So seller financing is an option to help move your listing to the top for in a market like this.
Yeah, it opens up your buyer pool too as well.
More people will take a peek at a listing that's seller financing in this market.
Absolutely.
Lastly, this is a big weird
this
one.
It's been a long time since we heard these.
No one's ever wanted to what we call assume a mortgage. Yeah. So that's what it is, assumable mortgage. That is another option. Well, now for the first time, the mortgage that they have existing on the house is cheaper than the current one. So it hasn't been like that in like 5+ years.
Yep. So what you could do, guys, is your sellers probably don't know. Most people don't know. Is the mortgage assumable? That's step one. Well, they can find out from their lender, you know, if it's able to, if it has the option of being assumable. So number one, they'd have to find out. And then number two, if it is in fact assumable, then that is something that you can advertise out there. Because again, with rates being higher than they've been in, you know, a long time, a decade plus, 20 years, whatever it's been, you know, that could be attractive to some buyers. So you'd have to see if it's an option. Buyer would still have to qualify for, you know, that current one. But that's another differentiator that you could throw out there if your seller has that option.
And that could affect the price quite a lot because if their payment's that low, then they're not buying down rates. They're not, you know, spending all that money on concessions. So you can offset some of your costs there as well. So lots of cool strategy, guys. Our goal was to bring you something that gave you a little bit more of the truth of what is actually going to help you get these listings sold in this market and to help educate sellers a little bit and explain to them what is actually going to be impacting your listing. It's not the amount of open houses that get done on your house. I hate to tell you. It might help 5%, but it's not going to be what pushes it over the finish line, guys. So take heed to these strategies. Appreciate everybody jumping on and listening through us. And again, like normal, continue to follow us on at The KP Elite on YouTube, Instagram, and all socials. And we'll see you guys in a couple weeks.
See you.